Hey everybody, welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
Drop the bomb.
We're gonna drop the bomb.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Lamar Darnell Shields.
Thank you, Sound Bombers. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good wherever you are. I hope that there's some good in your life. This is your good friend, Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields, joining you today again in the Bomb Shelter for another amazing show. I love doing this. And before I begin, I want to thank all my bombers out there. You all have been committed. You all have been downloading the shows. You all have been sharing the shows. Probably because, not because I'm amazing. I'm not amazing, but I, as I promised to you and when I created the show, that I have some amazing people that I am meeting or some people that are in my network. And I am just excited that I have a platform to share them with you. I know many of us are quarantined, self-quarantined. Many of us are working on the front line. So I want to thank my teachers, my social workers, my doctors, my law enforcement folks, my parents, my grandparents, all of the people that are pouring into children, all the people that are saving lives. I want to thank you all. And I'm glad that you are, while you're quarantined, I'm glad that you've been listening to the show. And I like that you all have been sharing the show. And I also like that you've been giving us some suggestions. If you have not, please do so. If you want to go to my website, that's drlds.com, drlds.com, my initials, Lamar Darnell Shields, and check us out. Share us with that. I'm going to do another inhale. And then an exhale, the breath of life that says that we are here. Hey, Sound Bombers, if you did not listen to last week's show, you missed out, because we had Uma Shankari on, who is an amazing person. She's an artist. She's an author. She talked about her spiritual growth. She talked about coming from India, going to Chicago. She talked about walking away from a corporate job to follow her passion, and her passion to understand spirit and spirituality, to help people heal through music, through art, through food. And we had a fun time. She shared a funny story about coming to India, going to Chicago, and I just could not stop laughing at that. And so today is not going to be anything different. As I said, I always bring on some of the best and the brightest. And to get this show started, because we're talking about a calling to heal with music. I want to introduce you all to one of my favorite films. I came across this film probably in 2016 or 15. It's called Alive Inside. I want you all to check this out.
What do you think of music?
My heart belongs to music. I love it.
Have you ever had music just hit you in a place that immediately brought you to tears? Music has that power.
Music connects people with who they have been, who they are, and their lives. Because what happens when you get old is all the things you're familiar with and your identity are all just being peeled away.
We're going to do your medicine now.
Our healthcare system imagines the human to be a very complicated machine. We have medicines that can adjust the dials. Blood pressure, oh, turn that down. Blood sugar, oh, turn that down. We haven't done anything to touch the heart and soul of a patient.
One resident that barely opened her eyes, she didn't respond. Knew her for 2 years. Once we put the iPod on her, she started shaking her feet. She started moving her head. It was amazing.
music has more ability to activate more parts of the brain than any other stimulus.
Who am I? I'm your daughter.
By exciting or awakening those pathways, we have a gateway to stimulate and reach somebody who otherwise is unreachable.
It can't get away from me if I'm in this place. It
takes me back to my school days. Oh, God, that's beautiful.
Does it make you happy to sing for us?
Yeah. I'm crying.
What you all just heard is a clip from a film called Alive Inside. It's a joyous cinematic exploration of music's capacity to reawaken our souls and uncover the deepest parts of our humanity. Created by filmmaker Michael Rosado Bennett, it chronicles the astonishing experiences of individuals around the country who have been revitalized through the simple experience of listening to music. You know, his camera shots reveal the uniquely human connection we find in music and how its healing power can triumph where prescription medication falls short. Music has a way of opening our hearts and helping us feel more connected to others, to ourselves, and to the world around us. And as a result, it is a direct line to our emotions and a state of being. Consequently, it has been used as a therapeutic intervention since the 18th century. Dr. Benjamin Rush, a physician and psychiatrist, was an early proponent of and the beliefs of the music therapy for medical conditions. By the early 20th century, physicians, musicians, and psychiatrists were using it as a treatment aid in a variety of settings. Well, today, music therapy is scientifically validated intervention. Moreover, it is used for multiple physical and mental health conditions, from Alzheimer's and autism to depression and substance abuse. But before my next guest knew there was such a thing as music therapy, he was just a kid who engaged in playing the piano at the age of 3 years old. Now considered to be a musical or piano virtuoso, Bill Protzman became interested in the way music works on human beings. He grew up playing and performing and realized very early on that the discipline of playing the piano was also a behavior healthcare practice when he began seeking non-traditional audiences, Alzheimer's patients and people struggling with physical or emotional injuries, stressed out business people, parents, caregivers. He began to understand the true power of music as a tool. From careful observation and engagement with audience for more than 40 years and a deep and thorough commitment to understand the most recent research and evidence on the subject, Bill teaches how each of us can use music functionally. Bill calls this music care. Bill's unique approach uses music education to provide teens with tools to consistently perform with passion. He works with individuals and teams to tap into their power, to trigger engagement and emotional relief using music. He has been a witness to the power of music throughout his life and speaks openly about how he has used music as self-intervention in his own personal behavior, healthcare, including confronting suicidal tendencies. Bill is the author of More Than Human, The Value of Cultivating the Human Spirit in Your Organization, where in this book, he shows us how spiritual best practices can help us achieve higher levels of productivity as individuals. Bill, welcome to Sound Bombing.
Lamar, it is such an amazing thing to hear all of that. I tend to forget that I've done some stuff.
You're sitting there like, who is this man talking about?
I know. And you know, I have the most amazing wife in the world. Well, I don't know, maybe other people do, but I have the most amazing wife in the world for me. And she's continually reminding me, Bill, you've done some stuff. You know, here I am out on the leading edge. And sometimes when you're in that place, it's hard to look back and say, oh, yes, look how far we've gone.
Well, you've come a long way. My producer sent me tons of information to research you. I go hard when I want to talk about the people that's going to be joining me in the bomb shelter. So before we get into your work, I want to get your thoughts about the film Alive Inside, clip that I played earlier.
Yeah. You know, I love this movie, and as I'm trying to figure out what to say about it, the first thing that hits me, of course, is I get that wonderful sensation where your spine is tingling and you just, you know, when you've encountered something special. That's this movie, Alive Inside. If you haven't seen it yet, if you're listening to this, you haven't seen Alive Inside, go out and find it. I think it's on YouTube. There'll probably be I'm going to guess you'll put it in the show notes, right, Lamar, so people can find it. But to see people like dementia patients, mental health care patients, to see people come alive, literally wake up when music is played, that is just, oh, that's an incredible experience. And this movie, I don't know when it was made right now. It's been a while, but I've had that experience of playing when I was a student at UCI. Across the street, there was a memory care facility, and lots of people in there with various stages of Alzheimer's and dementia. And I had the opportunity to play for them. And you could watch in real time. I mean, you could see it happening right there, Doctor. It's so amazing to see people come in, sometimes be wheeled in, and then to start playing music. And to watch the lights come on. And, you know, I didn't think anything about it. At that point, you know, it was just like, oh, yeah, of course people are going to respond to music. This is new. You know, they just do. This is what people do. Well, to reach in to someone who has no effect, like no facial expression, no movement, sort of dull eyes, and then to put on the headphones and see the music begin to play and watch that same person just wake up and start to sing and tap their feet and move, and in some cases be able to have conversations again. This is amazing power. This is just amazing power.
And it's interesting, Bill. I don't know who introduced me to the film. I think the film came out in 2014. I'm a film nerd. I love documentaries, and I volunteered in Alzheimer's community center years ago, and I thought that they were some of the funniest people. And so when I saw them using music therapy and these individuals coming alive, I mean, they were singing songs from when they were in high school, when they had gone to the prom, or when they might have been married. It just took them back. And that's what I knew. I mean, I knew the power of music. I love music. I love all genres of music. I have an older daughter who's a musician. She's doing an amazing job. She plays the piano, plays the guitar. She started like you, Bill, at a very, very young age. I gave her a guitar, and then she went to Peabody, Johns Hopkins Music School, and she had nice. The gift. And so I encourage you all to check this film out because it's healing. And the reason why I started with that, because what I know about you is that your music is healing as well. You've had some personal issues that you use music to bring you out of that. But before we get into that, who introduced you to music?
I was introduced when I was still in the womb. My mom was a piano teacher and pianist, of course, and she would play music all the time. I think some of the songs that are deepest in my memory are songs that I heard mom play before I was born. So it took a few years before I had the motor skills, but at 3 years old, she had me sitting on the piano bench. And like you, what a great thing for parents to do, because Lamar, when you give your kid exposure to music that way, it changes everything. It's behavioral. So you get all of that, the discipline of learning to be in a place and focus and do an activity. And then it's developmental because your brain is forming when you're that young, and music helps to and strengthen the corpus callosum that lets the left and right hemispheres communicate. Musicians who are active build that. And at an early age, can you imagine just using like all your five senses to come together and make music on a guitar or piano? That's hugely developmental. There's plenty of research on this, lots of it from the UK, as a matter of fact, but we have plenty of research in the American Music Therapy Association's archives for people who are curious about this, and you can go and get it there. I'm not a music therapist, but that's an amazing organization, American Music Therapy Association, that helps license and certify music therapists in America. There's an international organization as well. So giving your kids music at that early age. So mom did that for me. She did it for my sister. And, you know, talk about memory. I still remember the first two songs I learned. And not because they're great pieces of music, but because
what were they? Because I grew up playing the piano.
I loved it.
I wasn't. Let me just back up. You said mom introduced. Yeah. Let me just tell you, I think mine was a little more forced. I'm not going to be politically correct. I don't think my mom introduced me to piano. I think it might have been forced. But what I wish I would have stayed with it. I remember being in the recitals. I love sports. And so the thing is, Bill, I love sports so much, I didn't really want to do too much with the piano. But now when I walk past it, I wish that I did. So I remember being in recitals, playing and winning contests. I can't remember some of my first songs, but what were the first two songs that you were introduced to?
Well, you raise a good point. You know, I didn't like playing the piano for about 9 years.
All right, so we're on the same page. Okay.
We're on the same page, man. And you know, how can you quit when your mom's a teacher? So I you know, couldn't quit. And I'm glad that I didn't, but it wasn't easy. I wanted to be out playing sports too. So first two songs I learned. So if you're looking at the piano, if you haven't got one in front of you or you don't know what they look like, go find a picture and this will make sense. So the piano is a bunch of white notes and a bunch of black notes, and the black notes come in clusters. There's a cluster of three, cluster of two, cluster of three, cluster of two. And my first song was starting at the very lowest, two black notes with one hand, one finger on each hand, and playing plunk, plunk, and then going to the next one and playing plunk, plunk, and then all the way up to the top of the keyboard. Now for a little kid, that's a long way. That takes some, you know, focus and dexterity in certain, you got to be able to use both your hands together and whatever. So that little song, two black notes, bottom to the top, is called Going Up. Second song, I kid you not, this is the honest truth, the same thing in reverse, going down. So you take that left, right, all the way to the top, and then you go right, left, all the way down. And, you know, dang it all, I can't get those songs out of my head.
that's the power
they don't
of
those sound like
those
anything. there they are, man, they're grounding me right now, all the way back to 3 years old. So, yeah. It's like that.
Listening to you, man, I remember having to, I had an older sister, I was the youngest. And man, Bill, I would hide outside when my sister Kim would call me. I knew it was either piano lessons or we had to go to our piano class. And again, I wish now I would have focused. You know, it's kind of cool. There's a lady you're trying to impress. Boom, you sit down to the piano. There's a song that comes on. And I think that's why I was so adamant, and we were so adamant as a family, to get our children involved in music. So, but I heard you in one of your interviews say that playing the piano has saved your life. I mentioned that a little earlier. Explain that to me.
Sure. I'm someone who grew up in one of those stiff upper lip Midwestern families where we weren't allowed to express emotion very freely. But at the piano, my job was finding the emotion and expressing it. So I had this safe place where I could go at the piano and be with these big emotions. I've learned through years of therapy that my probably adolescence through early to mid adulthood, I spent a lot of time chronically depressed. And the music that I loved to play at the piano were the big romantic classical piano, I don't know what you'd call them, pieces, performance pieces. So I had this built-in pull toward big feeling. And of course, in my family of origin, big feeling wasn't, you know, appropriate. So I would have to do it at the piano. That discipline minded me much later in life when on Labor Day weekend, actually the Friday of Labor Day weekend, I remember this so clearly, I found myself feeling suicidal. And that wasn't new for me because as someone who had a lot of familiarity with depression and with the music that helps support one in that state of deep unconsolable grief, I had lots of tools, right? So I knew what to do to feel it. And also at that moment on that Friday evening, I was thinking, you know, even though I feel this low, I'm not going to find a gun or get a rope. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to be with music that minds me and allows me to be in this deep place. And I didn't have my grand piano with me. I had a keyboard, but it's not that satisfying to play the music on a keyboard. You don't get the vibration in your fingertips. So instead I put on headphones and I grabbed a piece of music that I love and I put it on repeat. And I sat in the chair to just allow whatever it was that needed to come to me, And I was surprised. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Doctor. I had experience with that, but I was surprised that evening at the level of grief that came up. I don't think I have ever cried that way before in my life. And obviously there was a lot of it because I was in the chair for a long time, hours and hours, and the music playing in my head. And of course it got dark And at one point, I had fallen asleep, and I woke up. My eyes just flew open. And all I can tell you is at that moment, I felt so awake. All of the grief had processed through me. There wasn't any more of that. I just felt like this alertness and awareness and a certain amount of energy, although I was wrung out. I was tired. So I took myself to bed. And the next day began with the process of inspiration that still continues. So from that Saturday of Labor Day weekend in 2007 on through today, the spark of what is possible for us with music just continues to grow. And it's fueled me all the way and probably will fuel me for the rest of my life as I do the work I have to do, advocating for self-care using music and showing people how that's possible and talking about it on programs like with you today. So all of what had been missing from my life came back to me when I allowed the music to let all of what I had been holding inside go free. And do I still feel suicidal? Yeah, sure, I get depressed. That's part of how it is. But I now have a practice that makes those things more like, oh yeah, here comes that feeling again, rather than, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed. So music has helped me get to that place where I can recognize things and opportunities that otherwise might be, you know, life-ending. And for me, that's really valuable. I love to be able to tell the story and encourage other people to go that deep with their music on the feelings that are sort of the ones we don't want to talk about, you know, the ones we don't like to bring up in public. Music can take you there safely and take you through them instead of just leaving you even more depressed. In my case, I went through it. Took work, but I went through it.
Well, Bill, I heard you mention two words. I heard you mention emotions and feelings. Why does music evoke emotions or feelings?
You know, music gets right to the part of the brain that triggers emotion for us. Not to oversimplify it too much, but as ancient beings, that ancient part of our brain is responsible for how we would respond to triggers that make us either scared or angry. You've heard of the fight, flight, or freeze response.
Yes.
A lot of that comes from sound. Sound enters our ears, of course, and it's processed 10 times faster than what happens up in the cerebral cortex. The amygdala is getting in there, the hippocampus is and they're producing a physiological response in us long before we think about what we heard and recognize what it was. So by the time we think about it, our systems have already got the brain chemistry flowing in them. Either fight, flight, freeze, or some people would say feed or mate. So famous five Fs, fight, flight, freeze, feed, or mate. And those are responses that have kept us alive for hundreds of thousands of years. Lizard brain, some people call it the croc brain, is responsible for that, and it responds to sound. Sight is also pretty fast, but sound is the thing that tends to spark up what we recognize as feelings or emotions. We feel scared. We feel safe. We feel angry. We feel peaceful. We feel joy, of course. We feel sadness. And all of those feelings are available to us in sound and rhythm, and dialing in on those things and then using the information that we get from music to, I don't want to say intelligently, but holistically process the stimulus that we got. What a powerful thing. Because you can play around with fear, for example, without having to be in a situation where you might be terrified. And becoming familiar with how fear works on you is a great invitation that music has for you. Same thing with anger, like emotions we don't like. But 3/4 of what we can feel is stuff we don't like. How can you go out in the world today and say, I'm an authentic person, if you're stuffing your fear and your anger? You know, that's part of what makes you and part of what makes me. And to be able to engage with those things we don't like safely and powerfully, like that evening where I basically listened to myself alive, if you welcome that stuff in, it will, first of all, release the feeling you don't want. But when that feeling is gone, it's replaced with energy and passion and purpose and intention and all the stuff you do want. And both of those things are authentically a part of you.
So as a creator of original music and content, can you walk me through what your creative process looks like as you're approaching either writing music or playing music or performing in front of a crowd? What does your creative process look like?
Sure. In a word, it's acceptance. But when you accept the creative process, you're accepting two things. First of all, you're accepting the tension. And secondly, you're accepting the release. And there's a musical sort of parallel here, because to make any kind of a sound, for example, with a string, you've got to pluck the string. And as the string vibrates, it's doing tension and release many, many times per second to get a sound that we can hear. So the creative process itself is tension and release. The tension between where you are right now, standing in the wings, ready to go on stage, and the release that's going to come when you leave the stage after the bows. From the moment that you sit down at your instrument, the tension that comes in the instant before you touch your instrument to produce a sound, and the release that comes once the sound begins. Even in the start and stop of sounds thousands of times throughout a song, there's an amazing author who's written on this, because the tension and release process is sort of universal for human beings. And he's really broken it down to the place where he can say that the creative process is really the course of least resistance. And why is that so? Because when you are creating something, whether it's a piece of poetry or a piece of code or a child in some ways, you know very consciously where you are at the moment before creation has to begin. And you have a clear vision, just as clear as your appreciation of where you are. You have a clear vision of where you want to be. You can see down the road from where you are the end result. And that creates the tension that you need to allow inspiration, understanding, all of the stuff that helps make that vision a reality comes from the tension that you bring to it and intentionally set up, actually. Intention, listen to me. You intentionally create this tension in the creative process so that you'll be pulled toward the end result, toward the thing you want. There's stuff like law of attraction. There's even scripture on this kind of thing. It's amazing how much a part of human civilization the creative tension and release that makes music and paint and everything else beautiful happen in our life is just built into who we are. Even our heart is tension and release, and our breath is tension and release. I love you started with the breath, because inhale, you could feel the tension as your lungs expand, and then the release of letting your breath go that's it. That's the primary music right there. And it's also the creative process right there, the beating heart, the breath. You know, the blood in our veins, that it's all part of this beautiful music and vibration that we make together.
So how would you describe the music that you typically create?
So I go two ways. The first album that I made was one where I was just covering show tunes. I was playing at Nordstrom at the time, and I thought, hey, I'll make an album of all the songs people like. But before we started recording that, the engineer said to me, Bill, just play something here, and I'll set the levels, make sure everything's fine, and so I sat down and just played. And the song that I played was spontaneous, right off, you know, out of the top of my head, whatever it was, just played. And we wound up making a second album of songs just like that. Now, the curious thing, of course, is once you know that you can do that, which I didn't know until after I'd played that song the first time, how do you repeat that process? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking to myself, gosh, we're going to go back. We're going to go into the studio again. I'm going to have to improvise like an hour's worth of music here, just without knowing anything more than that's what's going to happen. And, you know, the process that I described of allowing that tension to be the thing and knowing that at the end of the day we'd have an album was all that it took. Because that simple acknowledgement, that acceptance that I mentioned earlier, the acceptance of the tension release in this potential for a recording session and a beautiful album, was all that it took to release whatever I had to do to make the music happen.
You know, Bill, as I'm listening to you talk, it almost feels like a meditative state, because as I think about me approaching meditation is just a form of connection that I chosen to do, and for many years, and many people are making this decision, is that you talk about the intention, approach, and acceptance. It's when I'm in this meditative state and it's accepting those things that are happening, but just allowing those things to be. And allowing those things to be then also helps you to create, because what I heard you say is, I created this, but I didn't know how I can sort of create that again. And you talked about this whole allowing, accepting the tension. Because a lot of times when you hear the word tension, people think it's such a negative connotation. But you're saying accept what it is and then use that as a creative process.
You know, you're right to make the analogy to meditation. I'm not a great meditator, but people who meditate tell me that it's so beautiful when the voices in your head stop. And that happens to me regularly when I'm playing. The voices in my head, the internal dialogue, they go away. If I am tempted to listen to them at all, if they try to come back while I'm performing, my discipline is the same discipline that we do when we meditate, which is to have a sort of a mantra that returns us to a non-thought state. Does that make sense?
No, it makes a lot of sense.
So my mantra is the music that's happening. And to return to that place of no thought, all I need to do if I'm playing is to listen to the music. it's like you can experience music without thinking about it. Try that, listening to music that has no words, for example. You'll hear yourself trying to think about what's happening in the music, but then you'll also be responding as you tune into your heart or your gut. You can feel, like not think, feel the music working on you. And you'll have that wonderful, what's it called, ASM, the spine tingling thing that we started with. That comes to me regularly when I'm in that place. Does that happen to you when you meditate?
No, I get the same feeling. That's why when I'm listening to you, I mean, you might not have called it meditation, but when you're in that music, when you're in that moment, you are the music. It's like when you're practicing yoga, you don't say, I can stand on one leg. You say, I am. And I think that you become a part of the notes. You are the notes. Not I'm playing the note, but I am the note. And you might not call it meditation, but it's kin to meditation because you're doing it. You're allowing those things to happen and take place. And then it's like when I just interviewed Uma and she talked about channeling. She said, I'm not a great writer, but my writing is channeled by all these other spirits and these other things that are out there in the universe that's allowing her to do certain things. And I'm hearing the exact same thing from how you approach music. And that's why I wanted to sit down with you to have this conversation, because I could have invited any musician, author, composer on here. But when I read about you, I sort of got that feeling from listening to the music, from how you were dealing with your own emotions, and then how you're seeing your music play out when you're working with teams and groups of folks who are working together on a project or whatever they're doing to work together as an organization.
The cool thing is that just like with yoga and meditation, and I'm not great at either one, but they're also holistic practices. And it's so beautiful to know that that yoga, which has probably been something we've done for since we were, you know, new creations on Earth, you know, the coordinated stretching and allowing us to focus in such a beautiful way that we open to the possibility of, you know, more than just us, listening to music. These are practices that anyone can learn. And I appreciate the emotional intelligence movement. We're moving in the right direction. But the point here, people, is that it isn't about your brain anymore. The brain's a nice, you know, it's a nice guidance system. But there's more information available. And in this age that we're in right now, where we're really trying to figure out what's real, you know, how do I put my feet on the ground in a new way that supports me? Music is a huge, huge element of that, because it connects us so deeply with the other two brains, with the rest of us, with our being, and way more than physically, just like yoga and meditation do. The invitation to music is to open to that spiritual connection where inspiration really comes from. And Uma is so right. I don't have like any great creative skills, but I have the ability to shut it all down and allow that inspiring otherness to enter into my limited ability to wiggle my fingers at a keyboard and make something beautiful happen that wouldn't be there if I sat down and like contrived. And, you know, I've written things down before, but who was it? I think it was, it's Maya Angelou who says that, that poems sometimes come to her and she has to like chase them before they pass her by.
And that is so poetic. Yes. And I feel the same way when I listen to a note, when I listen to an artist, when I'm writing, that same type of feeling comes across to me as well.
Yeah. And you know, it's not always like that, I'll be honest with you, because like I've got a piece of poetry that I've been working on now for a couple of days and it may never come to anything. But sometimes it's a struggle because you find yourself getting all, you know, tied up in the words or the notes or whatever it is that you've got down on the page and it's just not working and things are wrong and you know it, but you can't quite understand how to figure it out. And, you know, that happens regularly too. So there is a discipline. It's not always free and easy, but the discipline practice makes the moment, you know, when you're chasing your poem, makes that moment possible. Because it opens you to the potential for those moments more than if you didn't do the discipline first. You know, so years of practicing the piano, I mean, why would you still be playing scales? Well, because it keeps you open. You know, why do you still do yoga? Because it keeps you flexible. Why do you still meditate? It's a practice, right? I mean, you know this as a doctor. There's a reason we call it a practice. And I love to play well. I mean, it's not that, but I'm going to go out on stage and things are going to happen there. And who knows whether it's going to be a perfect performance or not, but the perfection of it isn't about whether you hit all the right notes. Mm. Perfection is about whether you connect successfully with at least one person who's listening.
And speaking of connection, when you think of every social movement across the country, be it in America, be it in Europe, be it in Africa or the Caribbean or the South America, music, it was about connecting. You see people from all different walks of life coming together. In this time of COVID-19, Bill, what do you feel that the role of music is right now? And then, you know, to what extent do you feel music has the potential of being an actually a way to help change people's ideologies?
Wow. Well, right now is the easy part of that question. The ideology, we'll have to get to that in a sec. One of the things that I love about our technological world and our need to stay indoors right now is the explosion of content that's come both from professional musicians who are streaming just because it's the right thing to do, putting free content out there. I mean, just about any day of the week, you can see amazing artists with live streams on YouTube and bands in town and wherever. That's incredible. And then you hear people just like yelling out the windows. My daughter recently moved from a suburb of Denver downtown, and they didn't know when they moved that at 8 o'clock every night, everybody in Denver just yells out their apartment windows and stuff. So this giant voice.
So that was a part of the culture before COVID. That was a part of the culture.
Yeah. You know, we've been howling for a while, right? But you know, so we're sort of we're returning to our roots, maybe.
Well, and, we saw that in Italy. Together. Think about that. You saw the video in Italy of the concert. Yeah,
sure.
the balcony concerts and people, you know, having drinks and toast. Yeah, people are figuring out a way to be creative. I know I've been super, super creative during this time, but go ahead, finish your statement.
No, it's good. I was thinking of Wuhan, where the folks who were socially isolated there would cheer for the first responders and the medical professionals every night, and they had a chant that they were doing. So, this is a wonderful expression of music. It's getting a little warmer finally, and I'm looking forward to being able to take the drums outside. We have hand drums. And do like a little drum circle thing, and maybe we'll get the neighborhood going, and we can all do our socially isolated drumming from our front porches together. So I love how, you know, the fundamentals are coming back to us in this COVID pandemic, and a lot of those fundamentals are artistic. There's so much artistic expression going on right now, from the sublime to the ridiculous. It's amazing to me that people are craving laughter right now, and that folks who are doing comedy and saved comedy stuff that's out there available on YouTube, clips of this and that, even the ancient stuff from back in the day, it's getting a new airing. And oh my gosh, it is so wonderful to hear some of these old music again. I mean, we're talking, well, I'm a ragtime guy, so you know, we're talking Jelly Roll Morton kind of recordings from back in the 20s and 30s that they probably had, you know, on those rollers instead of on discs. It's amazing to hear this music, and it's enlivening us. Is it bringing us together? See, that's my question. And you said the ideology thing. Is it bringing us together? You know, the invitation in music is always collaborative. There's some very personal music that is part of my life too, but you can't make a sound without it, without other people hearing, you know? And if you do that on purpose and you want other people to hear, what kind of sounds are you offering? Are you offering sounds that allow us to connect deeply around some purpose? Are you allowing sounds that maybe help change people's hearts from one way of thinking and feeling to another way of thinking and feeling? And remember that thought comes after the feeling. So the feeling has to change first. And what would it be like right now, for example, to offer patriotic music in a streaming concert? Would that bring people together or split them apart? And I say that as someone who has all kinds of respect for Colin Kaepernick. Being able to call attention to an issue related to music that is so fundamentally part of who we are in America was a brilliant move. Now, whether it's going to achieve what he wants, you know, that's way beyond whether or not he ever gets to play football again. Whether it's going to achieve what he wants, I mean, who knows? But it takes guts to do something like that. And, you know, I don't know if I agree that it was the right thing to do, but it certainly had an effect that was necessary. And if that's what you intend to do and that's your legacy, man, it doesn't matter how good you were as a football player. If you help to solve a social problem, there's a legacy in that that goes way beyond whatever your other skills might be. I mean, who knows what we're called to do? You know what I'm saying? Here I am doing music. You're doing stuff. Who knows what our ultimate effect will be? So I tend to trend toward just offering the best I can and then allowing people to respond to that, interact with that, whether it's an essay or a poem or a piece of music or a performance or a podcast. And people can disagree, but let's have that conversation, man. Let's learn to be good at conversing again. If music can help with that, if drumming can help with that, then let's do that. Let's go there.
I think with there's so many different genres, I think music gives us that opportunity to have a conversation about the type of genres, the sounds, the melodies, the rhythm that you actually have. And I think as an artist like you, you are being bold enough to share something, a sound, a piece of artwork in hopes of the people accepting it or not accepting it. And it's a choice that you made as a musician. Now, speaking of that, if you didn't become a musician, what would you be doing right now?
Well, I've always had a side hustle, and the side hustle has always been music. So
your plan B is your plan A.
Yeah, my plan. So I've been in IT and had a successful consulting practice since I went on my own in '89, but I've been in the field since AT&T broke up for the first time back in the mid '80s. So my objective here is to change from my IT consulting practice into this place where music is about life. There's just a purpose in music and in helping people to use it well that doesn't exist in anything else that I do. And that's really calling me, and especially with the COVID-19 thing, it's really calling me to be able to offer not just more music, but to offer people a way to engage more deeply with the music that they love already. That's really the key right here, because that music is there for you. And just like it was there for me, kept me breathing, it's there for you too, provided that you are able to access it that deeply. And a lot of us think we do. I mean, that's cool. But oh my gosh, I've been beaten over the head more than once by saying, if you're feeling angry, play some angry music to be with your anger. Why would you do that, Bill? Well, why wouldn't you? Are you going to stuff that anger again? You know, that's not healthy either. So music can let you safely experience anger. I mean, I think this is why rap has been so successful. There's a whole slice of people who are able to experience their anger safely in rap that probably wouldn't have another way of doing it if rap wasn't around. And that's really healthy because, you know, anger can accomplish some good stuff, but not when you're all, you know, wired up on it. The anger is there to get you to the place that tension, right? The anger tension is there to get you to the place where you can create the solution that results in the release. So, and you can't go there, you know, all pissed off and stuff because you won't be effective. But the fuel in anger can get you there. Hey, the fuel in anger is what made America, right?
Yes.
So we got to be able to access that fuel. And music lets us do that in a powerful and safe way that medication, for example, simply doesn't. It does, you know, music enlivens us. It doesn't deaden us to feelings we don't want. It enlivens us, lets us move through the feelings we love, even those we don't want. We can move through them. And it's reliable and safe. And, you know, as you demonstrated with Alive Inside, it's fundamental to who we are. It gets to that lowest, deepest part of us that are most authentic and unlocks that. And that's what we need.
So I want to jump away from the piano just a little bit and walk us through the library. Can you talk a little bit about your book, The Value of Cultivating the Human Spirit in your organization?
Sure. I had a great opportunity to participate in a committee of veterans. I'm a civilian, but my family is military. So we were talking about how do you deal with moral injury? And our objective was to be able to come up with some sustainable practices that, you know, could be replicated to help people resolve moral injury. Moral injury is when your job is to break things and hurt people and your belief system is, you know, peace. So moral injury results in a lot of cases where you're asked to do something that you don't believe is the right thing to do, but you're doing it because the leaders say go. So great committee. We got through a bunch of stuff and we disbanded. We didn't have too much time to actually get the thing done. So I decided to complete it. And More Than Human is the result of that. So this is a sort of how-to guide for best spiritual practices, how to infuse them in your organization. What's the best spiritual practices? Things like gratitude and kindness and honor and integrity and just like the good attributes of human beings are all of those best spiritual practices. Of course, there's spiritual practices that aren't so good too. We can talk about dishonesty and stuff like that. And I know, why would I say they're spiritual? But the idea is to focus on the good stuff. And of course, we have evidence. There's great evidence in the B2B world now about how kindness and gratitude between organizations makes them more successful. And as an organizational leader, who wouldn't want that? So More Than Human, yeah, the value of cultivating best spiritual practices in your organizations is a powerful way to return to what matters and to position your organization or your family or yourself in a way that people want to engage with you and want to, in fact, do business with you, but to know who you are as a person because you're someone worth emulating. That's what best spiritual practices are all about.
And Bill, so how can our listeners get a copy of the book, and also how can they get in contact with you?
Really easy to find me. More Than Human, of course, is on Amazon. And if you can spell my name or even just take a stab at it, you'll find it really quickly there. Of course, it comes as an ebook and you can actually order a physical copy. Best way to find me and engage with me and find more free stuff and, you know, even connect with me if you'd like to talk is at quest.musiccare.net. The Quest is actually an online course that helps people unpack all of their ability to interact with music and to be able to sort of put it into a practicable, repeatable method of engaging. So quest.musiccare.net. There's a part way down the page, you'll see a link to a free guide for resilience with music. And resilience is a big deal right now, has been for the last several years, but especially with the COVID thing, resilience is something you want to know about. And using your music to engage with it can be a powerful way to begin your practice of music care. So of course, resilience is a best spiritual practice, and it's also in More Than Human. But the guide you'll get is like an adjunct guide to the More Than Human book, where you specifically go into resilience deep. And not only do you learn how to engage your own music with it, but you learn how to scale it. So if you have the opportunity to scale it with your organization or family, you can use the same principles and do the same steps there. And it works just as well. It's an amazing thing. So quest.musiccare.net.
Well, Bill, it's been an honor talking to you. I can talk to you forever because I'm a lover of music. I am definitely going to share the resources with my daughter, who is a musician. She is in college, but of course she's home now, and she is studying music, vocal training, opera, you know, playing the guitar. So she's right in line with this, and I like the spiritual connection that you made with music. But before you get out of here, my favorite part of the show is called the Super Bomb Questions. And this is a part where our listeners get a chance to get some other things about you. So, and we're about to start in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go. Bill, what is your favorite word?
Today, the word is cleave.
Cleave.
C-L-E-A-V-E, which has two meanings. One of them is to join together, and the other one is to cut apart.
What is your favorite quote or maybe spiritual verse?
Oh, well, a poet whom I respect asked the question a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's the right question for all of us right now. What is the one question you're afraid to ask yourself?
What is your superpower?
Oh, acceptance.
What's your spirit animal?
That one's easy, lion.
What moves you to tears of joy?
Oh, watching people who come alive to music, like alive inside.
What moves you to tears of sorrow?
Oh, when people miss the opportunity to come alive inside.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Oh, I'd love to just sit at the piano and play all day. You know, doctor, just noodle, play around, compose, improvise.
What dead person would you most like to meet or get advice from?
Oh, my gosh. This is recent. And if you're in his district, do you remember Elijah Cummings?
Elijah Cummings was a mentor to me. Yes, I do.
Oh,
I have a photo of him.
Wow.
Yes. A great guy. Great guy. We have a lot of history. So you chose a great person. A great person. So that's special to me.
He's amazing.
That you would even say that. What's your morning routine like?
Well, when I roll out of bed, which is getting later and later with this COVID thing, I find myself sort of shifting to being a night owl, which is strange. But I'll roll out of bed, and I always do a gratitude journal, and I always look for inspiration, and that can come from various different ways. Sometimes it's meditation. Sometimes I'll, you know, flip through oracle cards. Sometimes I'll read. But I like to be able to do the gratitude and the inspiration to get me started. And from there, I'll just allow the day.
I don't even know why I want to ask this last question. If you were in the Mr. America talent competition, what would your talent be?
You know, I would show up. I would kazoo, to be honest with
like
you.
That. You would kazoo. Well, man, Bill Prosman, I thank you for joining me in the Bomb Shelter, man. You have been a pleasure and a joy to talk to, man. I thank you for joining me today.
You're so welcome. Thank you. This has been what a great way to sort of start my day, which is morning in California. Thank you, Doctor. Such an incredible ride, and blessings to you and your family. And I look forward to hearing more about how your daughter's using music and her progress.
And I will share that with you. And thank you. I also want to thank my engineer, Alec Blanc, my producer, Kimberly Peterson, Supremacy for our theme music, and all of you for listening. Make sure you subscribe, leave a comment, and stop being stingy, and share me with all of your friends. We're on all of the platforms, all the podcast platforms. Subscribe, and you'll get all the new shows. If you want to know more about me, you can visit drlds.com. And as always, believe that something wonderful is about to happen, and that some people miss the message because they're too busy looking for the mess. And in the words of a guy who I have a lot of respect for, and I met him before he died, Dr. Wayne Dyer says, don't die with your music still in you. Thanks for tuning in. And we're going to leave you with Amazing Grace, a song performed by Bill Protzman. You've been listening to Sound Bombing. Peace.